Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, the content we are discussing will not be appropriate for children and could be triggering for some of you. Every day in the United States, over 8 people are assaulted during Uber and Lyft rides. According to a new report released by Uber, roughly 6,000 sexual assaults were reported between 2017 to 2018. There were also 9 murders and 58 people killed in crashes. According to Uber's own data, 42% of those reporting sexual assault were drivers. Now, those figures do not include assaults that happened this year. Lyft has yet to release any data. 20 more women from across the U.S. joined a lawsuit filed by the California-based firm Etsy and Bomberger. They allege that they were assaulted, kidnapped, or raped by Lyft drivers. At least 55 women have either joined or filed lawsuits against Lyft since August. Later in the show, we are going to be joined by 2 survivors. Joining us now are 2 attorneys. Michael Bomberger is co-founder of Etsy and Bomberger. Mike has spent more than 2 decades fighting for the rights of women who have survived sexual assault and is at the forefront of the new crisis on sexual assaults by Lyft and Uber drivers. Michael currently represents a number of survivors throughout the U.S. who've been assaulted. Mike says he receives about 3 calls a day from people who say they were assaulted by Lyft or Uber drivers. Mike's practice has several offices in California. He is based in San Diego, and today he joins us in studio. Hi, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
It's great to have you. And I should say we're joined by 1 lawyer and 1 victim's advocate. Tamara Streeter is a victim's advocate with Etsy and Bomberger. Tamara takes phone calls from women who were assaulted and is with them throughout the entire process. Tamara, thank you so much for coming in.
And thank you, Rose. I really appreciate you having us in for this very important topic.
Well, I appreciate the work that you both do. And I should say we reached out to Uber and Lyft for comment. Uber did not respond to our requests. Lyft sent us a statement, which I will read later in the show. So let's just talk about what we're facing here. I understand that you hear from women on a daily basis at your law firm, Michael?
We hear from multiple women each day. It's not singular, it's plural. We probably get a call from 3 to 4 women a day.
Wow. When did that start?
I would say it started probably 2.5 years ago is when we got our first call. And then we started to get more and more calls. And my office, someone that works for me, put something on our website, on a blog, talking about rideshare safety. And after they did that, the number of calls just exploded. We've had hundreds of calls from drivers, hundreds of calls from passengers ever since then.
Mm-hmm. Tamara, how long have you been taking calls from survivors?
Sure. So I was actually working for the Army as a victim advocate, and Mike reached out to me through LinkedIn and said, you know, my business could use somebody like you. And I said, what do you do? And he explained that he was taking these calls from women who've been sexually assaulted by an Uber or Lyft driver. And I didn't even know at the time that that was a problem. Would not have given it a second thought. Mm-hmm. And as I was working for the Army, he said, well, let me just give you a couple of cases you can look at. Just take some calls. And after hours is how it started. So the first call I got, I remember, was back in February of 2018, or 2019, right? Okay. And she explained to me what had happened, that she had been sexually assaulted by a driver after he took her home. He saw her stumble on the stairs. She went into her home, and he was right behind her and sexually assaulted her on the kitchen floor. And so from that point on, I was like, this can't be happening. This has to stop. So what went from part-time work quickly became full-time work. And I, resigned from my position with the Army. And I've been doing this full-time for Etsy and Bomberger now since about April of this year. And I can tell you, we put in sometimes 60, 70-hour weeks with this job.
Wow, because you're getting so many calls.
We get the calls, and then...
And then you go through the whole process.
I really do. We follow up 100%. What I love about this firm is that it could be from the day or the morning of the assault. And if they're close by, I'm here in the San Francisco Bay Area. If they're close by and they need somebody to go to the hospital with them, I'll go with them and go through the SART exam, the police reports, and then all the follow-on care. We actually set people up for therapy. We make sure they're into the right therapist, trauma-informed therapy, and then we follow them throughout the case. So from day one until whenever, I mean, I'm sure even after we settle cases that these victims will continue to be, or survivors at that point, mm-hmm. they will be continue to be my friends, or we will always be supporting them.
Yeah. Every story is different. What really stands out for you?
For me, it's the level of trauma that every single one of these women experience, and men, mm-hmm. That the two things I can always pull from them is that they are concerned for, number one, their safety, and number one, that the loss of control that they had, that it was such a feeling of the power being taken away from them, number one, but also the shock. They did not expect this. They've got somebody who is in a position of driving them home, of keeping them safe, and they are completely betrayed with that trust. And they lose trust in so many other areas of their life because of it.
Michael, what really strikes you about these cases and the stories that you hear?
What strikes me the most is how the profound effect these assaults have on these women's lives. It's hard to think about them. Because they're just so emotionally draining. Every time I sit in the presence of one of these women, they talk about what happened and how it affected their life. It's very, very difficult to hear. I mean, just yesterday morning, I spoke with a young college student that was raped in a vehicle, and you know, she couldn't go back to school. She couldn't get out of bed in the morning. She stopped going to school. She attempted suicide. It's now a year and a half after, but everything about how she views the world is now changed. And that's what happens to these women that are assaulted. It's a long, long, the damages last a long time.
I think this is so important because I watched the video when you gave a press conference with, is it 19 or 20 women?
It was 19 women.
19 women. So 19 women were so brave to tell their stories, and some of them. And they came forward and said, I don't want this to happen again. I want people to know that... that in this case, Lyft is not taking the proper action to protect passengers. And it's incredible to hear their stories. But oftentimes, you don't hear about what happens after.
Most of the time, you don't hear about
right.
after. And one of the important things to remember is that, you know, the numbers we know from the Uber report, they're the tip of the iceberg. Only one in three women that sexually assaulted reports it. So whatever those numbers are in the report, you can at a minimum multiply it by three. And it's very difficult for these women to come forward after this for a number of reasons, and Tamara can talk more about that. But the women that do come forward, that have the courage to come forward, they're the women that are making a difference with these companies changing their policies. And they're the ones responsible for protecting other women from this happening again in the future. It's, you know, the companies aren't making these changes on their own. It's the women that come forward, talk about what happened to them and how it's affected their lives that are creating, hopefully, a new platform that these companies operate under. And, each one of our clients that has come forward and talked about the incident, and you can, you know, I think we're going to hear from some later today, that experience has been so cathartic and healing for them, because it's all part of them regaining the power that was taken away from them, because so many of these women feel powerless and lost and alone ever since these incidents. And it's a very powerful experience from them. And they're changing other people's lives, and they're able to prevent this from happening to other people by coming forward.
And these are women living in many states across the country.
All over the country.
Have either of you been in touch with Uber and Lyft? Because I have to say, anytime we do a show about whether it's congestion or you know, how it's affected the cab industry, what have you, they just refuse to come on the show. And they usually just send us a very generic statement.
There's nothing more I'd love than to sit down with the CEOs of both of those companies and have them answer direct questions. You know, I read the interview of the CEO from Uber after he came out from the report, and it was essentially a word salad.
Yeah.
They asked him questions, and I don't think he answered one question. They asked him very direct questions, and he didn't answer one question. And it's, you know, it's all about if you're going to have transparency, what is your plan then to go forward? And I don't think he gave any idea other than to say, well, we prioritize safety. He didn't answer any direct questions about, well, what happens to these victims after the assaults occur? What happens to your drivers that are assaulted? What do you do for them? And he wouldn't answer any of those questions. So they're taking the money from the passengers, and they're making monies on each one of these rides, but they're not taking responsibility.
The New York Times had a piece about these sexual assaults, and Uber has hired Tony West, who worked under the Department of Justice under the Obama administration, and he is now Uber's chief legal officer. And he said, quote, "The numbers are jarring and hard to digest. What it says is that Uber is a reflection of the society it serves."
And that statement was troubling on several levels. It's not a reflection mm-hmm. of the society it serves. The platform, the Uber platform and the rideshare platform of putting two strangers together in a car isolated, that's something that Uber created, not our society. We've handled sexual assault cases for the past 20 years. I've never gotten one call on a taxi case, mm-hmm. on someone on a bus, and we've got hundreds and hundreds for rideshare vehicles. Well, what does that tell you? It doesn't tell me that it's a reflection of society. What it tells me is that both of these companies know that there's a number of assaults that occur in their vehicles, and that any just one is too many.
Now, this is really interesting, because a lot of people have been asking this question. Does this compare to taxis? And what I've read, and tell me if this is accurate, that there is no nationwide data on sexual assaults. Well, this is against taxi drivers. There's no data. But what about taxi passengers?
I'm not aware of any data, and I know that one of the things that Uber asked for in the report was for other industries and companies to come forward with their data, and I think that's a great idea. And if there's one thing I can say about this report, I applaud Uber for releasing this report, because in order to address a real problem, I think the first thing you have to do is admit there is a problem, which they've done in this report. But you know, these assaults did not have to happen. They have the technology to prevent them, and they have not used it.
What would you add on this point, just about how these companies are or are not responding to this, Tamara?
So from a victim's perspective, when he or she is attempting to contact the rideshare service and notify them of a sexual assault, oftentimes they get that canned response. They call it a robo response oftentimes. And they feel like that their complaint is meaningless, that they're not heard. You know, they're bawling their eyes out, letting somebody, some stranger, on the other end, if they're actually able to get somebody on the other end of the phone, to listen to their story, and then to be told, well, thank you, have a nice evening. And they feel completely re-victimized and traumatized by the reporting piece of it itself. And the one thing we know as victim advocates is that the first person that a victim reports to is crucial to how they follow through with their reporting, whether or not they're even going to follow through and call police. They're not given that option. They're not offered any assistance when they call. And then oftentimes they never hear from the rideshare company again.
And just to repeat, Michael, you said that you have not received calls from anyone taking taxis.
Never in 20 years.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to bring on a survivor in just a minute. But can you just, for people who are not familiar with Uber and Lyft, can you explain the process involved? Because when I get into a cab, you have the person's name and ID number, and there's always a camera right above the dash, and it's staring right at you. And so what happens when you call an Uber or a Lyft?
Well, when you call an Uber or Lyft, you are paired with a driver. Each of their platforms are a little bit different. The similarities are that you get in a car with a driver that you do not know, and that driver is supposed to take you to another location. And as you know, both companies emphasize and have advertised that it's a safe form of transportation. And what they additionally advertise is they actually have focused much of their marketing on people that are out drinking, because when you're out drinking, you don't want to put other people at risk, and it's the safe thing to do is to take a rideshare, is to take some other form of transportation rather than getting behind the wheel.
Right.
And unfortunately, what happens is that many of the people, especially women, because they've been drinking, are more vulnerable. And the people that drive for both of these companies that are predators understand that vulnerability. And those are the people that are often victims. And to answer your question about what happens in the vehicle is, you know, it for lack of a better term, it can be a crapshoot. You know, 99.9% of the rides are you get from point A to point B safely. However, there is if you're a sexual predator, there is an opportunity to exploit the fact that neither one of these companies have enacted technology that can prevent these assaults. You mentioned having a camera in a taxi cab. There are one of the things that we've been asking these companies to do for years: put a camera, some type of recording device, in these vehicles. If a potential sexual predator knows that they're being watched, you know, clearly the likelihood that they're going to assault somebody is going to be exponentially lower. Mm-hmm. So the companies, rather than talk about what they can do for how they put people in touch with a hotline after an assault or rape, why not try to prevent that in the first place? Instead of giving them a 911 button to press once a rape or assault occurs, which of course doesn't make a lot of sense, why not prevent that from happening in the first place? And, you know, both of these are technology companies. They have the ability to put a camera in. And I've gotten in rideshare vehicles in the past myself, and oftentimes there is a camera. And the driver will tell you, look, I have a camera in here. It's for my safety and for your safety. Mm. Makes perfect sense. The drivers are putting them in for their own safety. Mm-hmm. These are drivers that drive for these companies. If these companies truly cared about stopping sexual assaults and truly cared about the drivers and passengers in these cars, this would have been a long time ago.
So right now the onus is on the driver. The driver makes the decision.
Exactly.
Michael Baumberger is founder of SD and Baumberger. Mike has spent more than two decades fighting for the rights of women who have survived sexual assault and is at the forefront of the new crisis on assaults by Lyft and Uber drivers. We're also joined today by Tamara Streeter. She's a victims advocate with SD and Baumberger. Tamara takes the phone calls from women who've been assaulted and is with them throughout the entire process. Now we are going to be joined by a survivor. Caroline Miller is being represented by SD and Baumberger. 6 weeks ago, Caroline says she called a Lyft at 3 a.m. because she had to work early. And I'll ask Carolyn to tell her story. Hi, Carolyn. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for telling your story. And I just wonder, Carolyn, why did you decide to go public with your story?
Definitely because I want other women to come out about theirs, to know that anybody that this has happened to, it's not an embarrassing thing. It's not a shameful thing. I want them to come out and find the power, their empowerment back that I found by being able to speak out publicly about everything that's happened.
Wow. What has the response been since you've told your story?
With Lyft?
No, I'll get to that in a minute. I just mean in general, the public, your friends, your family.
They're very proud of me. That's pretty much it. I mean, you can't be anything except proud about someone who comes out about their story,
right,
no matter their feelings inside about it, knowing that I can make a difference by bringing it out.
So Caroline, you called a Lyft at 3 a.m. because you had to work early. And
yes.
Would you mind sharing whatever details you're comfortable with sharing?
Yeah, so I called Lyft I had to go pick up my car because I had work the next day, like pretty early. So I wanted to have my car with me because I live in Cartersville and I had been drinking out at a bar in Ackworth. So it was kind of far. I wanted to have my car with me. So I was obviously very, very tired at this time, you know, coming off of drinking and, you know, being 3 a.m. So I decided when the Lyft had picked me up that I wanted to take a nap in the back seat until we had got there, which was going to be like a 25, 30-minute drive. So when I had woke up to the Lyft driver's hand and messing with me down there and telling me, I'm taking you to a hotel. Yeah. He didn't say, do you want to go to a hotel? He said, I'm taking you to a hotel. The first thing I thought of was, oh my God, I don't have anything to protect myself. This guy's a lot bigger than me. I need to find a way, you know, to not get kidnapped. And I told him, you know, okay, you know, that's fine. I acted nice. I feel like I was complying because I knew that if I tried to physically fight him, I wasn't going to win. And I couldn't jump out of a moving vehicle. So I told him, I was like, oh, well, you know, I just need to get my inhaler out of my car still. And he went along with that, luckily. And I was texting my boyfriend at this time, telling him what was going on, where we were going, because I couldn't physically call the police, you know, and explain to them in front of this guy what was going on without something dangerous happening. So right when we had pulled up to my car for me to get my inhaler, I got in and locked the doors, and that's about the same time that the cops had arrived, and then they ended up arresting him on the scene, and yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. And what happened after that?
So a few days later, so he was still, you know, he got arrested. I wasn't able to drive my car because I was so shaken up. I ended up having a friend having to come pick me up. So a few days later, I realized that my money was still missing out of my bank account for that ride. And I was like thinking, okay, well, that means that Lyft doesn't even have any idea of what happened, which I thought was completely ridiculous that they weren't even alerted about their driver doing something like that and being arrested and on what charges he was arrested on. So I ended up giving them a call like 2 or 3 days after and saying, you know, hey, explaining the situation, explaining everything that happened, explaining that I would like to have my money back. And they never said a sorry. They kind of just avoided me explaining the situation to them and avoiding a response from them at all. So I did get my money back, but I didn't ever get a sorry. I didn't get, you know, the customer service agent never sent me to someone higher in the company. They never sent me an email. They didn't do anything. They didn't try to reach out to me at all.
Wow. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. I'm all right. It's hard to talk about sometimes, but
yeah, and I mean, again, thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for joining us. What changes would you like to see from these companies?
I want to see them, well, it starts off with caring about your customers to begin with, because the thing is, there's no way as a business do you think about the risks that can happen, you know, with your employees. People always think, well, that, hey, my employee could be someone dangerous, but they don't care. They don't think about that. They don't put the proper safety measures in their cars. They don't do an extensive background check. They don't do in-person interviews, really. And I think all of that would make a big difference when starting off knowing who your employees are, caring about what kind of people that you have working for your company and representing your name. And then, too, going with the safety measures in the cars, like putting in cameras, you know, because, I mean, obviously a criminal isn't going to do something on camera.
Right.
Generally, unless they're completely insane. I think that these things that have happened to me and other women are 110% avoidable. And I think that is the most frustrating part about it all, is knowing that Lyft doesn't even care about their customers like that or what could happen to them possibly. They just care about the money that they're getting. And I feel like that's obvious in so many ways. And I also feel like since they have been, a lawsuit has been brought forward to them already and they hadn't made changes and things have happened to me and other women, that they just find it easier and cheaper to pay out these lawsuits than to even fix anything.
Hmm.
And that's just sad. Hmm. And that says a lot about what kind of company they are.
And Caroline, before we let you go, what message would you send to people who take Lyft and Uber, I mean, at all hours of the day, really, but especially late at night?
Yeah, I know it is. It's a huge. It's very convenient for a lot of people who, you know, don't have a car or they live in a busy city, so it's the easiest route to get from point A to point B. To those people, I would say, just be safe. Make sure that your driver and the car match the description that's on your app. Try to be on the phone with someone during your entire ride. Try to record it and just let people know who you're in the car with, what their name is, and just take as many safety precautions as you can, because you never know what's going to happen with these people.
Well, Caroline, again, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you all for having me and letting me talk about it, for sure.
Thank you. Take care.
You too, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Caroline Miller. She is being represented in the lawsuit by SDN Bomberger. You can find more about Caroline's story and the other women who are involved in this lawsuit at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we will continue speaking with Michael Bomberger, co-founder of SDN Bomberger, who spent more than two decades fighting for the rights of women who have survived sexual assaults, and Tamara Streeter, a victim advocate with SDN Bomberger. She receives regular phone calls from women who were assaulted during their Lyft and Uber rides. And we should say that it's not just passengers, it's also drivers, and we will talk about drivers after a break. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This edition of Your Call is pre-recorded. We're not taking calls this morning. However, we welcome your feedback. Our email is yourcall@kalw.org. Our website is yourcallradio.org. Our Twitter handle is @YourCallRadio. Tomorrow's show may be preempted. KALW will be carrying the impeachment debates on the floor of the House of Representatives starting at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. The state of American education will be the subject on 1A at 11 o'clock, right after Your Call, 1/2 hour from now, here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about a topic that is not appropriate for children and might be triggering for some of you. We're talking about sexual assault and rape that happens during Uber and Lyft rides. And it's not always the passengers, it's also drivers. And today we are joined by Michael Bomberger, co-founder of SDN Bomberger. Michael has spent more than two decades fighting for the rights of women who've survived sexual assaults. He currently represents a number of survivors who have been assaulted and are suing Lyft. He also gets calls from Uber drivers. Tamara Streeter is a victims advocate with SDN Bomberger. Tamara takes calls from women on a daily basis who've been assaulted, and she is with them throughout the entire process. And now I would like to welcome another survivor to the show. Jane Roe 2 is identified in the lawsuit filed by Estienne Bomberger against Lyft. She has been asked to be anonymous for this interview. Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Can I ask you, before you share your story, why you decided to go public and share it?
Sure. Yeah, I just feel like this is such a problem, and I really hope that Lyft can take the initiative to fix this. And the only reason, the only way they're going to do it is if people stand up. And as tough as it is to do it, I'm really just hoping everybody, you know, every victim comes up and starts talking, because it's the only way we're going to make a change.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing. Thank you for joining us. And if you wouldn't mind, would you share whatever details you feel comfortable with?
Sure. Yep. I was headed out in February for a night. I was kind of semi-business meeting, just meeting up, you know, with an acquaintance. Wasn't, you know, too out of the ordinary, but went out for dinner, and I ended up having a couple of drinks, and I am not somebody who will drink and drive, so I thought that calling a Lyft was a safe and wise choice to do. So I ended up getting a Lyft. I left my car where I had dinner and knew it would be okay to get it the next morning. I was about 15-20 minutes from my house. I got into the vehicle, the Lyft vehicle, and about 30 seconds down the road, the man who was driving said to me that I look like a sad girl. And at that point, I just, you know, I got very nervous and anxious and really uneasy, but I just brushed it off as, look, it's okay, just going to get myself home, no big deal. You know, it was rather late, so I was pretty tired, so I just put my head down. The drive was fine, you know, three quarters of the way. I got off, you know, the exit, and that's when I felt him reach his hand back and touch me. I kind of didn't think it was real, you know, so I just pushed his hand off, and he did it again. I was a little bit, you know, like I said, I had my head rested and my eyes closed, so did again, you know, I pushed his hands away, and then the third time I turned, and he had proceeded to reach his hands back again and assault me with his hands rather aggressively and quickly, and I just froze. So I was in his vehicle, and I didn't know what to do. So I just froze and panicked. I felt like I was at the mercy of this man. He was, you know, violating me, and I didn't know what was going to come next. Really just feared for my life at that point. I then thought of my son, and I said, you know, my son's not going to have a mom who's the victim or who would go through anything. So I decided to fight back. And we had an altercation to the point where he dragged me out of his car. And as trying to fight back, I did everything that I could. And at one point, I was holding on to the side of his vehicle, and he slammed my wrist in his front driver's door and drove off and dragged me with his car. Finally was able to release, and I was in the middle of the road, very dark road, nothing, limited cell reception. Actually was missing a shoe at that point as well. And he had my cell phone, my laptop, my bag, everything. He threw it out of the vehicle and proceeded to run over it multiple times. I don't know if that was his idea of, you know, he wouldn't be found at that point. And then had to get the courage to go up to a house that I had never been to before. I was terrified that I didn't know who was going to answer the door, but thankfully a woman did, and she called the police, and they took me to the police station where I gave my statement. So, you know, yeah, it was very, very traumatic, not anything that I would ever think would happen to me, but it did, and I hate to be that type of person that says, oh, if it happens to me, it can happen to anybody, but this is truly an instance where I never really thought that I would have to worry about something like this. But I did.
How are you doing today?
I'm okay, I've fought relentlessly for the past, you know, since February, and I did get a guilty verdict for this man, and he's serving jail time. So I feel that at least one part of this somewhat taken care of, you know, but he's eventually going to be. But I worry all the time. I have panic. I have anxiety over this. And I think about, geez, what if I just didn't do, what if I just drove myself home? You know, would have that been a safer option? And, you know, it's really scary. So it's just something I deal with every day. I try to get through it. But, I mean, literally think about it every single day.
Wow. What response have you received, if any, from Lyft?
There was no response. So what had happened was that night, we went to the police station. I gave my statement. The police located the man, I believe, the day after, and they brought him in for questioning. At that point, I believe Lyft was contacted by the police department. But I have never heard anything. I did try to call, didn't receive anything back from them. And I knew in my gut they were not going to be helpful at all, because you have to think about it. If someone's calling in to say, look, this awful thing happened to me, they're brushing it under the rug anyway. So I kind of got in my head like, geez, what if they try to cover it up? So I wanted to make sure I had the police involved right from the start. But there was never any response from Lyft.
What advice do you give people who take rides now from Lyft and Uber, especially when it's late at night?
Don't take a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, call a taxi cab, because they're vetted. There's, you know, a division between the driver and the person taking the ride. And, you know, if you're going to go in to a Lyft or an Uber, just understand your risks. You know, I don't want to just single out women, but it happens to be that we're the ones that are being victimized time and time again. So, you know, even just a little thing, if you don't have your phone on you, like, you know, roll up a dollar bill. I know this sounds really crazy, but roll up a dollar bill so it's sharp, you know, and then you can at least fight off, because most, you know, if you're in a car, you don't have your keys, and if you're in a Lyft or an Uber, you probably don't have keys on you, or, you know, your phone's in your pocketbook, you can't get to an app or a panic button, so make sure you do your due diligence and have something that can fight off a perpetrator, you know.
Before we let you go, Jane, are you getting any help or therapy? I was just thinking about, you know, how expensive that can be. And I'm guessing, does that have to come out of your own pocket?
Oh, yeah. No, I pay for therapy, and, you know, thankfully, you know, I can afford to do that, right? Because there are some women out there that can't.
Right.
So it's not about, I'm in intensive therapy, and it's something that even if I feel like I'm okay one day, I could push myself to go, because as right now we're just, this has been almost a year, right? In February, creeping up on it. But it's been a year of complete stress and wondering what's going to come next. And, you know, the back and forth. So, yeah, I'm in therapy. I was in and out of doctor's appointments for back issues, being dragged by the car, cuts, bruises.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And thank you for joining us. You know, I was talking with Michael earlier about the long-term effects this have, and I was just thinking it might be interesting to check in with you and maybe a couple other women in a couple months just to find out, you know, how you're doing and where we are with this issue, if you don't mind.
No, yes, I would love it. You know, I can tell you it's a lot, you know, I think my story might be a little bit different, but, you know, I physical sides of it and the stress, I think you let other things go because you've got this awful thing weighing on you. And in my case, you know, I let something go, and it resulted just because I thought it was stress and anxiety, but it was something else. So yeah, I think people go through stuff a lot.
Well, thank you again for sharing your story, and thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thank you so much.
Jane Roe, too, is identified in the lawsuit filed by Esty and Bomberger against Lyft, and she has asked to be anonymous for this interview. Michael and Tamara, I mean, her story is horrific. She thought she was going to be killed.
And I think Tamara can address this very well. You know, what strikes me is so many of these women say the same thing, is that they thought that they were going to be dead. Wow. And it's a life or death experience. And when they are going through those, if you just sit here and imagine to yourself that you think your life is over, it's going to end, you have a child, and you're no longer going to be here anymore, it can be a very, you know, it's terrifying. And their responses are a lot of the same responses that you have when you're in the wild, when you're for survival. Many women freeze, which is, you know, their way of trying to play dead. Some women fight and fight for their life. And those seconds, minutes, or whatever the amount of time is, those moments of terror, you never those are with you for the remainder of your life.
Yeah, and that's very true. What he's talking about, the tonic immobility, that is just our body's response of survival instinct. I need to stay alive in this moment. And oftentimes what's surprising, even to me, is that the level of trauma is pretty much the same when you look at the fact that oftentimes they are trapped inside that vehicle. So there's a person in control in the front seat who has ill intentions for them, and they know that already based on some predictors he's already put out. And so they are already feeling trapped. Either they're going down the road at 70 miles an hour on a freeway, or the doors have been locked and disabled and they're unable to open them, or they're frozen and they don't know what to do. They're thinking, if I just stay still, I'm going to survive this. And, you know, with one client we had, she was locked in the back of a car for, what, 5 hours?
5 hours?
5 hours. And raped during this process, and really felt like she was not going to survive this. You know, they turn around and they will do things like the first victim talked about, which was they will play along. They will try to get them to convince them that they're on their side. All I need is my inhaler. All I need is to get this or get that. Or, yes, I'll go with you, but can we stop right here and I'll get some? And that's when they make their run for it. But it's that level of trauma that's going to stay with them forever. Because, I don't know if you've ever had anything bad happen to you, but, I mean, I can remember, you know, being 6 or 7 years old and some older man grabbing me and kissing me on the face. And I can still tell you the smell of his breath and the feel of those wet lips touching mine. Mm. And that was 50 years ago. Mm. And I can still remember that. So I know that this trauma stays with you. The difference that we try to make with these women, and you know, this is why I'm so proud of working for this firm, is that we have 4 victim advocates that work for our firm. And every single one of us is just committed to the healing of these victims to survivors. And this firm goes out of their way to ensure that, you know, we're finding a rape crisis center for them, we're finding therapy for them, that we are ensuring that every step of the way that they feel supported and held by this team. And I think every one of them would say that. You know, I get the feedback from them, and they just love, you know, what Mike is able to do for them as far as just taking care of them through this process. But at the end of the day, we really are working through this trauma with them, understanding it never goes away, but we're going to get them through it.
I have to say, hearing you talk about a woman who was trapped for 5 years just made my
five years.
My chest is tight just hearing this.
Yes.
Well, how is she doing today?
She's had a couple of suicide attempts. It's been really, really difficult for her. And, you know, we have weekly, sometimes daily phone conversations, you know, through medication management with her doctors and you know, just kind of dealing with the trauma and, you know, understanding that it's affecting every single area of her life. She's been unable to work. She's been in and out of the hospital. She's basically agoraphobic, won't leave her home without her husband. He has to be at her side every moment. And this is a woman, I share her story because she actually was somebody who spoke out in our original lawsuit. So I just want to clarify that she is somebody who's already spoken out and told her story. And she's very brave, and she was, you know, just one of the person that really touches me, and I just feel like whatever we need to do to help her and get her through this, you know, again, is something that that I think we all feel strongly about. Is, you know, we're looking to help these people, but to stop this problem.
Tamara Streeter is a victim's advocate with the law firm Esty and Baumberger, where she takes phone calls every single day from women who've been assaulted riding Uber and Lyft, and she's with them throughout the entire process. Michael Baumberger is co-founder of Esty and Baumberger, and he has spent more than two decades fighting for the rights of women. And Michael says, I just want to make sure I have this right, you get about three phone calls a day on average?
You know, it can be one phone call a day. It could be eight phone calls. You know, it varies. But we get it. You know, I can't remember the last time we have not gotten a call. And you know, not only phone calls, emails. We get contacted by people constantly.
You know what makes me so angry about all of this? I just think about this 5-hour ride. If there was a camera, and now every time I turn on, because I watch videos on my computer, on YouTube, every time I watch a YouTube video, there's an Uber ad saying, we just installed these emergency buttons. Can you tell us about these emergency buttons?
You know, the emergency, so we filed a lawsuit against Lyft in September, and there was a press conference, and there was a lot of information in the news about rideshare safety. And both these companies were tripping over themselves to talk about how safe they were and their new safety features. And one of their safety features that they rolled out shortly after that was these panic buttons, and these you can be connected to 911 if you're being assaulted. And, you know, it all sounded good, but, you know, just imagine, let's just think about this a second. You're in a car. You may have been drinking, you may not have been, but you're in the back seat, you're dozing off, you wake up, driver's on top of you, and you are going to now say, okay, can you hold on a second, stop the assault while I operate my phone and, you know, use the panic button or the 911. It's absurd. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the changes that these companies have proffered in the name of safety are, you know, they're cheap. That rather than try to offer a meaningless app, why not try to prevent the woman from being assaulted in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, we know the trauma that begins once the assault begins. Do you think, even assuming a woman's able to stop an assault after 4 or 5 minutes with a panic button, do you think that woman's life isn't going to be changed? Her relationships aren't going to be changed. Her you know, she's not going to be depressed. She's going to be profoundly affected. And you know, what we're asking these companies to do, rather than talk about being a reflection of society, take basic steps to be able to prevent these assaults, to be able to prevent these women's lives from being ruined, because the consequences are, they're very serious.
We're almost out of time. The Lyft statement is basically, in just the last few months, we've launched 15 new safety features, criminal background monitoring, in-app emergency assistance. But like you said, this is ridiculous, because if you're being assaulted, what if you forgot your phone? What if it falls out on the sidewalk? I mean, all kinds of things happen. What changes would you like to see?
The two most important changes that I think both of these companies can do is, number one, put a recording device, digital recording device in the cars. They have the technology. They've had it for years. They're a technology company. It's so easy. Each and every phone has it. It could easily be attached to the front of the vehicle. A lot of drivers do it already. That's number one. Number two, mandatory reporting. When you find out that a predator has sexually assaulted and a predator that you have hired that's on your platform, that's driving people of the public around, when you find out there's a predator or criminal, has assaulted somebody, report that to the police. And if you don't report it to the police, what's the message you're sending to the driver, number one? And what's the message you're sending to the passenger, that we don't care? And what is the and what are the consequences of allowing somebody that's already sexually assaulted somebody to continue driving, you know, women alone in isolated circumstances? It's, I mean, it everyone knows that predators, they don't, it's not one time, it's multiple times. And that's why we have cases where these people have done it multiple times, mm-hmm. you know. And if these companies, you know, there's a reason why there's mandatory reporting, because it works. It helps prevent further assault. It helps prevent further crime. It helps prevent further pain in people's lives. It's an easy thing to do. It sends the right message to the drivers. It sends the right message to the passengers.
Well, we're going to have you back, because the other thing that makes me so angry is, why didn't politicians implement these regulations from the beginning? But a recent report from the National Employment Law Project found that Uber and Lyft have more lobbyists than Amazon, Microsoft, and Walmart combined. So this goes straight to the companies, but it also goes straight to politicians who failed to regulate these companies. According to this report, they've got major lobbying efforts in 41 state legislatures and many local governments to basically prevent any kind of regulation. Michael Bomberger is co-founder of SD and Bomberger. He has fought for the rights of women who've survived sexual assaults for more than two decades. Tamara Streeter is a victims advocate with SD and Bomberger. She takes calls from women who have been assaulted, and she's with them throughout the entire process. Again, Michael says he has never received a call from someone who was assaulted by a taxi driver, but every single day he's receiving calls from women who are assaulted by Uber and Lyft drivers. And we'd love to also have you back to talk about how the drivers have been assaulted. So I just want to thank you so much for your work. Thank you, really, for all that you do, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show, and Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. Thank you for joining us. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.